top. Amen. Let it rock. I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun.
Tommy, that's a tape thing.
Whoever she is, I'm going to find her and I'm going to hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish.
I'm always home. I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hi, Hoff fans. Welcome to this very, very special edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Zimmer Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. Today, we're not chatting about a film, per se. We're chatting about the first third of Philip Zimmer Hoffman's career.
Yeah, we kind of broke up his career into, like, three acts. And we pretty much finish it with Boogie Nights. And, because obviously you've been listening, thank you. And with, like, the Twister, Hard Eight, Boogie Nights combo, like, that was a big momentous part in his career. And if you look at it, actually, even in, like, numbers-wise, it is pretty even.
Yeah, and that's the craziest thing, because when we just looked at the movies, the IMDb list or the Wikipedia list or whatever list, because the lists do vary
by
year.
They do vary, yeah.
We said, like, where did his career change, right? Like, where were the pivotal moments in his career?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at, like, the two really pivotal moments, yeah. And we'll discuss the other one later, of course, but the first really pivotal moments is when he gets into that P.T. Anderson / Twisters.
Yeah.
Twister zone. I don't want to repeat the
again,
suck zone again.
No. Yeah,
the zone.
It's just the films that made everyone, between those three, I mean, more Twister, Boogie Nights, between those two movies, again, that was like everyone from one or the other of those movies started recognizing him from public, everyone in his field of, you know.
If you didn't know his
actors.
Name, if you were in the industry at least, you at least recognized his face.
Yes, yeah.
And you mentioned it right now. Numerically, it almost makes sense. Like, if we didn't even know at all and divided his career in mm-hmm. threes, that'd be one thing. But it's within, like, a 3 or 4 movie margin.
Yeah.
If you divide all his films in thirds.
Yeah, so it just logically made sense to us to kind of throw you guys this special episode that we recap stuff, and we also have brought in pretty much all of our guests back.
Yeah, we chat with a lot of our friends. Mm-hmm. We just recap the earlier parts of his career, and we thought we would give this, like, the chance to look at his short film work.
Yes.
Now, we're not really touching on his theater work, because, frankly, I'm not a theater guy. Kyle, I know you're not a theater guy.
No, I mean, I respect it, but I know...
Oh, of course,
but I know nothing. But I know nothing of it, and this is... It's a film podcast.
We would be...
It's an on-screen...
Yes, a film / TV.
Yeah.
We'd be probably just as good as doing a geology podcast as we would doing a theater podcast.
Actually, Brian, I know quite...
Are you a geologist?
I am.
I never knew. You had a rock polisher in your room.
Oh, that's what that thing is for?
Probably a pet rock or something. Regardless, yeah. This is our opportunity to just look at some of the shorter subjects that you might have seen on his IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kyle, I'm really excited to get started with the guest. And our first guest, is, appropriately,
yes,
is the co-founder of Cage Club Podcast Network. We've had him on before. We had him on for My Boyfriend's Back. He's... The Godfather, we call him.
Yes.
Joey Lewandowski.
Mr. Joey Lewandowski.
Hey, Joey, how's it going? Thanks for coming back on.
Hi, guys.
What's happening, Joey?
Hi.
So, we... Yeah, good to have you, of course.
Thank you.
We brought you on for this kind of celebration of the first half of Philip Zimmer Hoffman's career, because you've kind of been on this journey with us, being the founder, president of Cage Club Podcast Network.
Sure, thank you. Along with Mike, I don't want to distance myself from him.
We're in this together.
He and I. Yes,
and we'll have him on as well.
You just have this. Yeah, you just have this very Godfather kind of feel, Joey.
Well, I like that. I appreciate that.
So,
but he's my consigliere. If I'm the Godfather, he's my consigliere. So, I mean, it's 1 and 1A. You know. So
I hear you.
Gotcha.
I don't know who I fear more, but I guess we won't get in trouble to figure that out. I don't want a fish in a newspaper in front of my door.
Don't open the door then today, I guess.
So, Joey, like I said, you've been along with on this ride with us, kind of.
Yep.
What were your impressions of, like, I guess, the early part of his career? Because this is, I guess, for us, the part that we knew the least of. And it just...
Sure.
I mean, some crazy movies here, some crazy stuff. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So the one thing that I noticed, I think I pointed out to you guys, was just how... Like, I figure the early stuff in any actor's career is going to be obscure. But, like, really just how obscure a lot of the stuff that you've done so far has been. I mean, your last two were both, in terms of the film world, massive movies, both Paul Thomas Anderson movies. But the stuff leading up to that point, there's things you have to, like, import videos and, like, find stuff online and, like, do all this weird stuff that, like, when Mike and I did Cage and Keanu, it was, like, you know, there was some stuff early in Keanu's career because it was, you know, Canadian TV and stuff like that that wasn't readily available. But for the most part, like, all that stuff was available pretty much on DVD. Like, it's not like we had to go really sort of out of the way too far to find this stuff. And you guys have, like, gone to Poland to find some stuff that, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's been in.
So I mean,
like, I knew that, you know, every actor, I'm sure, who's done 40 or 50 or 60 things has been in stuff that's going to be, you know, on some level hard to find. But I'm sort of surprised at just how obscure a lot of this stuff really is.
Yeah, that definitely took us by surprise. I mean we there's still some of the shorter work we haven't been able to track down.
Yeah, one thing was even nominated for an Academy Award, the short film that he was in. We can't find it anywhere. But, I mean, I was happy that we found movies like The Yearling, you know, TV movie, even his Law & Order episode, I guess, just since, like, Dick Wolf is, like, part owner of the world, his stuff is out there. But, yeah, when it came to In My Boyfriend's Back, which, obviously, you guess it on, you know, that I could have seen that being possibly hard to get, even to the we're going to be doing another one coming up, and I see that the DVD is for sale on Amazon for like $40.
Yeah. Wow. There was one movie that we did for Keanu, I think it was Permanent Record, where it's just like a generic sort of high school movie. It's about teen suicide, but the DVD's out of print, so we both had to spend like $30 on it, just because, like, it's not a movie that's good. It's not a movie that people are trying to see, but just because it's not out there anymore, it's expensive if you want to own it. And so, you know, whether you're trying to find it, because I know you guys don't necessarily buy everything, you might rent stuff or whatever, but, like, just in terms of getting some of this older stuff, like, you know, as you move along in his career, you're going to have really no problem in terms of finding. I feel like if you run into any problems from here on out finding stuff, I'd be sort of surprised. You know, because he's a bigger profile now. He's in bigger movies. He's in stuff that, like, won't really be lost to, like, VHS.
Yeah,
or
we're
whatever,
also moving into the DVD sort of world entering, and stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. We're getting to a point that it's like we're, you know, in. Next film is from 1998, so like Brian just said, DVD. I mean, we've had to buy, as far as like hard copies, Brian's bought both, and it was the VHS of Joey Breaker, which was, again, Brian, what kind of version
was
that?
It was the screening copy, so like...
Yeah, the screening copy. Yeah,
that's the only one you can get. Like, I've seen other copies on eBay, and they're all the screening copies. They might not have even released it on VHS, like mainstream VHS.
Yeah. And then the other one was, and you had to get like a 2-for-1 DVD. It was the Call of the Wild and the Yearling, I guess, since they're, you know,
yeah, the TV movie.
Literary,
it was like, what is it called? The Disney
TV
Adventure
movie.
Pack? No, it wasn't Disney. It was just like Adventure Pack or something.
Classic. I'm looking at it right now. Classic Adventure Pack or Classic Adventure Collection.
Oh, nice.
Well, that reminds me. Like, I just bought the DVD is called Family 4-Pack because I wanted to get Frasier the Sensuous Lion or Frasier the Lovable Lion, because that was a big part of The Leftover season 3, and so now I just have this like family 4-pack of just like random ass movies on my shelf just because I want to watch one of those movies. So I think anybody who's really hunted for specific things that are hard to find, you're going to have some of those weird multi-pack movies where there's no interest in the other stuff except for the one.
Yeah, that's definitely
true.
So any other thoughts on his early career, maybe something you've seen since we've done the podcast or anything like that?
I'm just mostly excited to see him in bigger things because it's still sort of surprising. I mean, it's still early in his career, but, you know, even these later movies, he's only been in a couple scenes. And so I'm waiting for him to really sort of, you know, take the reins. And I haven't seen Twister in, like, I don't know, 15, you know what I mean? It was a long time. And so when every guest came on here, they're like, oh, I saw him in Twister. In my head, I was building up that he was, like, throughout the movie, but it's not, like, he's not, like, the lead,
no.
You know what I mean?
No,
like,
he's just a really memorable guy.
Yes. Like, I'm waiting for him to be, like, this leading role. Like, the second movie, you know, obviously he's going to do this before the second movie that I'm on for, but, like, a movie like that where he's, you know, one of the... Actually, he's not even in that movie. Maybe he's just... I don't know.
Honestly, he's just an actor that I think... You know, I mean, well, in his early career, he was taking work to take work and build his craft. But then later on, I mean... It's just, oh, is this an interesting role? What can I do with this? And then he would, and then
right.
It wasn't about, you know, like how big the role is or if it was, you know, I mean, how many lines and who he was sharing it with. It was just how interesting, I think.
See him be a consistent leading man to the third act of his career. And even then, he's still not taking all, you know, leading man roles.
No,
look at his last movies, The Hunger Games. He's obviously not the star of that.
No.
Right. I'm just excited mostly for you guys, because, I mean, like, hearing about the movies themselves is good, but, like, when you guys actually are able to, like, dig into, like, who he is in the movie and, like, his scenes or whatever, like, there's more passion and there's more excitement there, both as a listener and for you guys. So I'm just excited for more things that, you know, in an hour-long podcast you can spend, like, 40 minutes talking about him as opposed to just, like, here's his one scene and, like, let's, like, you know, spend 10 minutes on it, but, like... That's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I want him in more of these movies for your sake, so that you can, like, really, like, dig into what he's doing, as opposed to, like, well, he's got this one, like, you know, 3-line speech at a pool table, and that's
it's
it.
A craps table, you know, sir. It's a craps.
No,
table.
He was at a pool table though.
I'm sorry, triple bogey.
Forgetting our first one.
Yeah.
I'm an ass. I'm sorry, Godfather.
Such an
but
idiot.
Also, I mean, the same thing with the craps table. Yeah, like, it's the same. I mean, he's just finding himself at these tables and just with these, you know, mini monologues.
Yeah.
And then it's hard to sustain a full hour-long podcast on that. But, like, I would love to get to a point in his career for you guys where he's in half the movie or most of the movie or whatever, and you can sort of do your, you know... your ever more specific plot summary that, you know, Brian tempts you or taunts you into doing, that you could do that and sort of, you know, capture most of the movie, and then the rest of the podcast is just like, all right, like, he's in this a lot, like, let's just talk about him. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, that's what I'm really excited for.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting there.
There's definitely...
Where, I mean, even...
Yeah. No, there's definitely some films I'm really looking forward to, but what you're saying is what I'm looking forward to the most, which, as far as our episodes have gone so far, I think... Boogie Nights was even, and it's funny because it's the biggest, like, ensemble one and so much going
right.
on, but there's just, like, so much he did with that character, even in, like, in the scenes that he was in. So I felt like we got to talk about him the most and just kind of went around to, like, our other favorite scenes and just give a general
yeah.
you know, plot ideas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're also going to get some better movies, too.
Yeah.
So we're not, like, struggling with, like, one, you know, this just crappy movies at times. I mean, I like talking about the crappy movies.
Yeah, the 2000s were pretty good
yeah,
to him.
Yeah, I mean, he's in good films there, even when he's not the main character. They're usually very good films.
Which Mission Impossible is he
in? 3, J.J. Abrams directed.
It's the best one. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
No, it really is. Him as a bad guy in that movie is just, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I mean, I love 4 and 5, but 3 is the best one. I mean, that's exciting. Because I sort of, you know, as the thing has gone on, I must confess to you guys that I haven't been watching every... I've been listening to every episode, but I have not been watching the movie since about halfway through. But, like, when we get to a movie that I want to watch again or want to watch for the first time or whatever, I'm definitely going to jump in there and just see what's going on with him. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to rewatch, like, you know, Mission Impossible and all that sort of stuff. Like, whew, I can't wait. I'm excited.
Yeah. Awesome.
Definitely so are we. So what's... Anything new coming on Cage Club? Anything we should be looking forward to?
In the network all around.
So this episode comes out this week, right? So we're nearing the end of Keanu Club. We only have a couple episodes left.
Wow.
We're nearing the end of Zack Attack. We only have a couple episodes left. That'll sort of stretch a little bit longer just because it's monthly as opposed to weekly. We've got new stuff launching this fall that we have not announced yet. Mike and I are following up Keanu with an actor of similar stature, I guess, in terms of, like, people hate him, but maybe wrongly, and we're going to set to figure that out. And then Joe 2 and I are going to follow up Zac Efron with two different podcasts.
Wow, look at you.
Both monthly, and they're both similar to Zeff in terms of Hollywood hunk, but also makes cool movies and stuff like that. So we'll announce both of those a little bit later this summer. But the other exciting thing is that Wistful Thinking. I know you guys mentioned that last week, I think, on the podcast. But there's the new episodes of that every other week. It alternates with Now and Again. So both sort of nostalgia podcasts. You can listen to those.
Yeah, both are great.
But yeah, I mean, there's we've got at least four new shows launching this fall, awesome. And then one early next year. So there's lots of things to do. I just hope that people are out there downloading and listening. So,
Joe, you know why I love you? When I listen to Wistful Thinking, the passion you spoke with when talking about Casper was just amazing. It brought me back.
I love Casper.
Me back to the Westwood movie theater when I saw that with my family.
I just love Casper.
Well, Joey, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Look forward to when you come on again.
Is my next movie, it's in the final third of his career, right? It's not in the middle third?
It's in the final third, yeah.
It's in the beginning. I guess middle of final third.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's
I'm an innocent bystander for this middle third, but this is maybe the best third of his career, so.
Well, we want to get you and Mike to get on here and like do an episode together with us, another four person.
So we might have you on before then, hopefully. Right. Hopefully.
Cool.
All right, thanks so much, Joey.
Yeah, thanks, Joey.
All right, bye, guys.
Yeah, we really need to have him back before that episode he's already on. Like, we need to have him in the second third. Because
of course. We'll make that Manzi Lewandowski 1-2 combo.
Yeah, we need the co-founders, the Godfather and the Consigliere together. Yeah.
I just want to hear them. I want to find a very divisive film that they'll argue about.
I would love to hear them argue.
Yeah.
You never hear them argue on their other episodes. But a little bit.
A little bit, but I mean, like, I want to get Jerry Springer level.
Yes, I want heated. I want the fire out of Manzi.
Ooh.
I want to see that. I guess I put this question out to you. Like, now that we've seen all the films in the first third, what are the kind of roles he's taking on? I think we've mentioned it in some podcasts.
We'll go with the first like big role of his of Scent of a Woman. We're seeing like that preppy jerk, which he again will revisit in a film like Talented Mr. Ripley. And then Leap of Faith was kind of his first ensemble like group movie, which then we got him again in Twister.
Yeah, very similar there. Not the films, but just like Barnstorming the Heartland.
Yeah. And then I mean Money for Nothing I'd say actually was one of his also like it's a simple, but it's, like, a good dramatic role, and we'll get those, like, in definitely some future films. And then I guess, you know what? The Yearling was a real character,
which
we'll definitely visit in future films. I mean, Cold Mountain definitely comes to mind just because it's like a Southern character, but...
Yeah, it's fair to say he's yet to play the lead.
Oh, yeah, no, we're definitely... That's what I cannot wait for, like, the most.
Yeah, and we've talked to some people who, I guess, prefer him in the supporting roles.
Well, you know what? I mean, in the end, I think also just the general, from critics and audiences, maybe felt that way, because we do see that he was nominated once and won once for Best Actor, but he was nominated 3 times for Supporting Actor.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah. So, it's just something, you know, that's something that was happening in his career, and I mean just in the end I think those side characters, those supporting characters, just tend to be more interesting and, you know, meaty for him to play with.
Well, when we first talked about doing this, me and you, we kind of looked at his IMDb. There were a lot of movies we didn't know, as we said, but we kind of saw like a slow build of what he would become.
Yes.
And that's something that really attracted us to just doing this podcast. Just seeing that like he would play these characters, these memorable characters, but the small characters, and then kind of build up where eventually he's a Hollywood leading man.
Of course. I mean, unlike our counterparts at Cage Club, Nick Cage, come on. I mean, he was Hollywood royalty, and then just right from the get-go was in some of these big films, and then his career
starring in them.
And starring in them. Not only being in them, but starring in them. And Philip Seymour Hoffman, by all means, was just like that slow boil, which, I mean, he paid his dues, still at this point of his career, as far as we've gotten, definitely still paying his dues, but taking these characters that, again, critics and audiences alike are noticing him.
Yeah, and that,
again, we've covered two of the most, like, films that people recognize him for.
Yeah, especially, we always ask that question to our guests, when do you first recognize him?
And Twister and Boogie Nights.
Twister and Boogie Nights. It's towards the end of this period. Mm-hmm. If not, then it's towards the end of the next period.
Yeah.
With Along Came Polly and films like that. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time the wider audience is starting to see him.
The first, like, big splash he's made.
We brought Jenny O'Connell, of course.
Yes. Yes, she's practically another host.
She'd be the third member at this point.
Yes. So we're going to travel back to a magical time of 1991 where Philip Seymour Hoffman got his start on... Dun, 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 dun.
I'd come in with a nice sax now, but you know what? No. The freaking season one does not have that good of, like, a sax.
It doesn't.
It doesn't have that good of anything.
I'm so disappointed. It doesn't have Jerry Orbach, where I'm like, where's Jerry? Like, where's Sam Waterston?
It's only the one, like...
Like, I know guy. Chris Noth, but...
The chief guy.
It's not like I actually care about Sex and the City, so I'm just like, you! Cool.
So, Jenny, what we're alluding to here, we brought you back to discuss not only the early stuff of Philip Seymour Hoffman, but this Law & Order episode he did, which this actually predates his film.
Yes.
This is his first role.
This is him achieving actor dream of being on Law and Order. You know, and he got a really good deal. Like, I mean, he's playing the worst. Like, he's just a douchebag. Like, there is no sympathy whatsoever.
Yeah, and Law and Order has this history, right, of, like, unknown actors who become big, who play rapists.
Yeah, or, like, it's like, are you playing a rapist? Are you playing a dead body? Are you playing, you know, like, the like, sassy mechanic that doesn't know what's going on? Are you a jogger in the park? Like,
Season 1. Episode 14, Law & Order, The Violence of Summer.
Yeah. So that's the name of this episode. You can just, if you have a Law & Order DVD or a VHS or something, or you could also rent it on Amazon. You can
like
see this
bucks,
this one episode. Oh, actually, you have to buy it.
Yeah.
You can rent it. No. Whatever.
Pleasantly on this episode.
Personally, I think you should just go to the dump, dig through, you know, just with a shovel, and try to find this episode on a VHS.
That's
in
usually
a
how a Law & Order episode starts, so that'll be appropriate.
This is like OG Law & Order. This is actually before, like, OG Law & Order.
Yeah, this is like, I didn't even realize these characters were on Law & Order before.
Same.
Yeah.
There was, like, only two people. I mean, I recognize some of the other actors, but as far as, like, the people from early on Law & Order.
Well, the captain from SVU.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. That's
true.
Yeah, he's SVU.
He's on this, like, a similar
role. And then
one
of the attorneys is still, like, she moves on later on. I think she's, like, a judge.
Right.
She becomes a judge. You're right.
She's moving up in the world.
She does.
I think SVU has more staying power.
True.
So, like, a lot of, I guess, our generation is more familiar with that one.
Yeah.
Regardless, so I guess we could just run this episode quickly. So Philip Seymour Hoffman plays, like, a gang rapist, like a drug-addicted gang
It's like
rapist.
Philip Seymour Hoffman and his super douche, you know, just garbage people friends. And, like,
I think his
friend
is the guy from Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah,
right?
I think so.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, and they're all just awful. Like, they are just the fucking worst. And his first line is, like, don't be stupid, don't be dead, in the court. And I'm like, oh, my God, Philip Seymour Hoffman, you're killing it here.
Do we want to play the clip?
Why not? Let's play this clip.
Yep, that is a douchey guy.
Yeah, like, he will eat you alive. Like, his character is, like, not admirable, but, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman is just, like, goddamn.
and whatever, it's, like, one of these things where it's, like, your typical Law & Order plot, except it's more... I don't know, maybe because it's dated, but, like, I feel like the cops are a little grimy here.
They're super grimy, though.
They're
I will say
working class New York cops.
But they like try to, like, screw people over. And again, we're not going to go through this plot.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, it's like basically what you would kind of expect, except there is the pleasant surprise of Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yeah,
or
yes.
Samuel motherfucking Jackson, you know?
So
like,
I guess, again, this is the first, well, he's not in a scene with Philip Seymour Hoffman. But then they are together in
Heart Eight. Yes. Yeah. So they actually share a scene in this film.
In this episode. I felt so bad because I'm like, oh, Sammy J, you got to defend these douchebags.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
So sorry. You know, like what white nonsense are you dealing with? You know,
it's funny because he's like that Johnny Cochran style lawyer.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
But he's defending these like.
Just garbage people.
White junkies, like a better word. Yeah, yep. So his other big scene also is, like, the car confession scene.
Yeah.
We don't have to, like, play that if you don't want.
Right.
Nah.
Yeah,
It's nice to see him this early.
Yep.
It was a nice trip down, like, memory lane of, like, slender, young, like, future ahead of him, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
And he plays a crackhead in this.
He does.
I mean, from the first scene, it's in a courtroom, and maybe they were sharing that via dialogue, but he was like, he looked, again, like preppy to me. I'm used to him.
It reminded me of a Scent of a Woman.
He's in a courtroom, and he's got a suit on, and he's younger. Like, the other guys, he's like, because they're trying to frame their one friend he's like, I'm only 17. Yeah, but they'll try you as an adult. And so I thought it was just like high school prep kids that. Like,
oh, yeah, I thought it was, like, NYU prep douchebag.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of
no,
thing.
But it ended, yeah, I thought the same thing, but it ended up being
no, then the cops go, and it's just, like, yeah, them, like, sitting on the side of the road, just, you know, like, by, like, a bunch of, you know, smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Interesting role. Had he been to rehab at this point?
Yes.
So he's coming out of that, and he's taking, like, a drug addict role. So for him, this is not, oh, let me just do a bullshit Law and Order thing. You know, this is like, I guess something he could kind of sink his teeth into as a young actor.
He's a meth ed actor.
Wow.
Wow. Do you need to go back into the bathroom and put lotion on your skin? Because
that's in the future, Jenny.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
I forgot.
This is true. Fuck. Ah.
Go forward until that. That's how it starts. We end this episode with that.
Yeah.
Now we're going to have continuity between episodes like that.
Right.
So we'll just get back into this. So, yeah, I mean, the cool thing about seeing this is just like early Philip Seymour Hoffman, early Samuel Jackson, early Law & Order episode.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. On a show that gives like many a people chances and, you know, you get some gems from it, like a Philip Seymour Hoffman and a Samuel L. Jackson.
If you're a Law & Order fan, definitely check it out.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's Law & Order. Like,
Dick Wolf.
Exactly. It's playing on TNT somewhere right now.
You never see season one, though, playing.
True.
Anywhere. And then maybe there's a reason for that, but
yeah.
It did start a whole franchise of...
This is back when people were still like, what is that dun-dun? Like,
yeah,
it's
true.
Just like people were like getting like chills and goosebumps. But, like, I remember as a kid, like that scared me. Like, you know, played like later on.
Because the law
night.
Was about to be laid down and some order was about to be...
I didn't like...
Orders. I mean, I hope that people, you know, like heard that dun-dun and like, you know, heard, like listen to the song and be like, you know what this needs? It needs some saxophone.
Yeah.
Like,
and
right
then
there.
A little like... at the end of it.
Exactly.
Whimsical.
Mm-hmm. Law & Order is indeed a whimsical show.
Yes. When I think Law & Order, I think whimsical.
Especially Criminal Intent with Vincent D'Onofrio.
Oh, God.
Like, I'm Vincent D'Onofrio, and with me is the teacher aide from Mighty Ducks 2.
Wonderful. So, Jenny, you've been with us. You've done a couple of episodes, too. You've done two episodes with us. Final thoughts on Philip Seymour Hoffman's the first third of his career.
Part one, okay.
Part one, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm terrible at coming up with puns, so I wish I could, like, you know, come up with something a little bit more clever to, like, dub his career, like, you know, the Philip Seymour Hoffman Strikes Back, like, you know, the Hoffmaning, like, whatever, you know, but I can't. So I think he has a really solid, like, first career. Like, I'm envious. Like, he got some, like, really good opportunities, and he ran with them. Like, I really appreciate that from such an early point that he was really committed to growing as an actor. Like, he didn't do, like, the same sort of tics and be like, oh, look at me, I'm Jesse Eisenberg, I'm an asshole, like, you know, kind of thing.
But tell us how you really feel.
I know, right? yeah, but I appreciate that. It's like he was put into these like very specific types, but you know, he'd be like, he wouldn't treat, you know, every like preppy asshole the same, or like every like I'm just an everyman mechanic, you know, like part the same, or crackhead addict the same, or like, you know, he has some variety. I respect it.
Yeah,
like,
really in his roles, his characters, and then just from the actors that he's gotten to work with, from your Pacinos to even
Newman.
A bad movie that I keep saying is bad, My New Gun, but Diane Lane. You
true.
Know, like, he's just in some great movies with some great actors.
So, which movie are you looking forward to most in the next chapter of his career?
Ooh, Big Lebowski. Or Almost Famous. It's a tie.
Ooh. Yeah, those two we're going to get in the next third, and
yes.
We're super excited about those as well.
So excited.
As you should.
So thanks, Jenny, for coming on this
very special
episode, and look forward to having you on in the future. In fact, we're going to have you on very, very soon. So
yes. Oh, man.
Guys, check that one out. Always love to have Jenny on the podcast.
Yeah.
So crazy. I guess it's not crazy. I mean, it's really common that you see like someone get their start in Law & Order.
No, how about that? I mean, you just got one of the greatest, and we also got, again, Samuel Jackson in that episode as well. So
I'm happy, though. I did not expect to see a Law & Order episode when we first started this podcast. So
happy. And now we both own it, because that's what we had to do to watch it. So
yes, that
what,
is true.
What a treat.
We both own one episode of season one of Law & Order. So out of all these films, I'll ask you, what is your favorite performance of his in this first third that we're talking about now?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, it's a pretty obvious answer, but I'm going to have to go with Scotty J from Boogie Nights and then Dusty from Twisters. So some of our last couple of episodes. And, you know, I mean, that's no surprise. It's no coincidence. He's taking these roles that are more entertaining, and he's in the film a lot more.
I'll ask you this question because, I mean, I agree. Boogie Nights and Twister, that's what does it for me as well. I'll ask you this question then. What was the, I guess, most pleasant surprise, biggest surprise with an early performance of his?
Well, since I gave two answers for the last one of favorite, I'll give two answers for pleasant surprise. And first I'll go with The Yearling, and then I'll go with Triple Bogey.
Oh, Triple Bogey. Wow, so his first role is a pleasant surprise for you.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, it was a pleasant surprise because for a, you know, first role and a film I didn't expect much from, he was entertaining in the minute that he was in it, you know? It was just, it was just really fun to see from his first theatrical role that he was, at that point, already Philip Seymour Hoffman. Even if he wasn't being credited, if whatever he was at that point, Philip Hoffman, but he was playing it as Philip Seymour Hoffman, like...
Actually, I mean, that's a good point. I had wrote down The Yearling as well, because I didn't expect anything from that movie, and I didn't expect anything.
TV movie.
Anything from that performance. Look, I'm always going to expect something from a Philip Seymour Hoffman performance, but I didn't expect... like I think I said in that episode, he could have easily mailed it in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. TV movie.
And he was good.
Remake, and he was great, I thought.
This one's going to surprise you, but one that's like surprised me with his performance, believe it or not, is another early one. It's Shuler, actually. And maybe not the way he acts or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that he's in that movie for so long. Hard to for us to really
understand. I was looking at that and I was going to say that, but it's just like obviously the whole dubbing and everything like that just made me
takes it away.
Yeah, it takes away.
I can understand that.
Takes me away from Shula.
So speaking of Shuler, and we said this during that podcast, we looked through like lists of people who had seen all his films, and they just said, this one you can't find. This one, you know, just forget
it. We covered it, though.
And we did it, so hooray for us.
But we brought in the big guns as a special treat for you people.
Yeah, because we were discussing this with one of the Cage Club co-founders, Michael Manzi.
Of course.
And he had a little tidbit about this episode, so we're like, we were going to bring him on anyway.
Yeah.
So, without further ado, let's hear what Mike Manzi has to say about Shuler and some other things.
How's the peeping? No.
You tell us.
Yes, Michael Manzi, welcome. Welcome back. How you been?
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's been a while.
What
What am I doing here? I'm not so sure, actually.
What are any of us doing here?
And that's the question we're answering today.
Is what I asked myself after watching the new Mummy movie.
Wow.
Oh, you saw it?
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it.
And?
And what are your thoughts?
It, you know, it's pretty weak, I gotta say.
Not a fan of the Dark Universe yet?
If it was its own thing, I could understand it being kind of like this cool one-shot sort of teenager like market movie, but now that you know they're going for this expanded Dark Universe thing, it goes from the Universal logo into the new Dark Universe logo.
Really?
And it's just like, oof, they're putting all their eggs in the basket here.
Wow.
So, you know, time will tell. We'll see what does the foreign market think.
Well, speaking of foreign markets, that's what you're here to talk about. Ooh. Look at that segue. Okay. I'm impressed with myself.
Kyle, yeah. you ruined the natural segue. That's a good segue, but...
That was a beautiful... I hopped on that.
But I didn't properly introduce him.
Okay, so properly introduce him, but now we know we're going to talk about something foreign.
So, foreign pornography, Michael Manzi.
Oh, man. Well-versed.
No, I mean, if you don't know by now, you haven't been on Cage Club at all. But this is Michael Manzi, Cage Club co-founder, co-host of Cage Club, Keanu Club. I'm sure some wonderful other things in your own...
Upcoming things, too. Secret things at this point, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Joey kind of teased us about that. But we're definitely excited for those announcements. So, third of Philip Seymour Hoffman's career. You've been on this journey with us too. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. So I've listened to every episode. I love the show.
Thanks.
I think you guys have great dynamic, good guests and everything. Guests are good on the show, so it's very entertaining. And I don't know if it helps that I'm just such a huge Hoffman fan now. Like, I just want to hear people talking about him.
Yeah.
But you guys do it very well. So I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kind words.
You're welcome.
Always good to hear praise from Papa.
My children. My illegitimates. But I was actually like... Yeah, I actually learned a lot about this part of his career. Tons of stuff I'd never heard of. I only really knew the mainstream, like super mainstream stuff. Like, I didn't even know about the movie, the episode that I was on, Money for Nothing, right? And like, that's like a John Cusack film when he was like a really big star. So like, it's been interesting, like learning about stuff that he's done coming up and. Hearing how sort of P.T. Anderson is just like, you know, took that instant shine to him and, you know, decided I'm going to make this guy my star. He's like almost like his De Niro to Scorsese in a way. Like it's really cool to see that. I was not really aware of like how close they worked together from way back. And so it's been a lot of fun listening. I'm having a good time going on this journey. I like the pod.
Yeah, it's really fun, and thank you. That's very nice of you to say. But
yes,
it's really fun to see, like, one of the greatest character actors like of all time, start like see him from like the roots up. Literally, actually, honestly, like even like planting the seeds and then seeing it just like grow and him paying his dues and, it's just I'm just glad people are enjoying it.
Yeah, it's nice when we've had the actors on, you know, and, like, they can even, like, relay that they noticed him working on his craft. Because we're film guys, but we're, like, film-watching guys. If anything, you might call us production guys. I mean, not me, but from an actor's point of view, like, the fact that they're verifying that is also pretty cool, I think. Like, that's something that I've enjoyed so far doing this.
Yeah, and I liked, I also thought it was interesting how he like, kind of has all these tricks in his bag already. Like, you know, he's doing different things in a lot of those early movies, but it's all, like, you could still recognize him as the actor behind it all. Like, I feel like he's got, like, all this range at the beginning already that we're seeing and is really going to explode later in his career where he can basically do anything, I feel.
Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah, like, I can't wait to, like, refer... Like, we're going to watch a film that we've all seen before with him in it, and then, like, refer back to something he did in a film we hadn't seen earlier in his career, and be like, wow, maybe he, like, developed that character there.
Yeah, he's just taking this, like a slew of, like, talk about, like, pretty different characters, and I think it's just really, I mean, it did. It's not like, I wonder, it did pay off in the long run for him, and just like crafting these like different personalities just from, I mean, just, you know, from his different like dialects he like does in the roles, from Scotty J to his, you know, high school goon to his New Yorker.
Yeah, his Gatsby impression, right? Like, I love him in the private school sector. But yeah, you could just see it in between the two PTA movies he does, right? Like, he on PTA knew, it's like, his performances couldn't be more different between Hardy
Definitely,
and Boogie
yeah.
Nights, right? Yeah, and, like, that's what I'm talking about, like, right there. It's like, the dude can just, he's all over the map, and he can do it all.
Awesome.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. So, Kyle, you alluded to a foreign topic we were going to discuss.
Yes. So, well, Mike, I'm going to let you get into it, but when we did the episode of Shula, we mentioned on it our curiosity of this one-man dubbing, and then I spoke to you after, and I mean, get into it. You said you were like, I know, yeah. like it just happened to work out, right? This is pretty weird.
Yeah. This is pretty funny. This is like, this is why I love this show, because it gave me a reaction like this. Like, I'm sitting there listening to Shuler, and you guys start talking about, you know, the overdub. And you're like, the guy's just talking over the movie in a different language. And I'm like, this sounds familiar. I know this somewhere. And then you played like a clip. And it clicked, and I was like yelling at the podcast. I was like, I think I know what's going on here. I think I know what's up. I got to talk to these guys as soon as possible. So I'm really glad you have me on the air for this, and I hope this is relatable somehow.
Oh, definitely is, definitely.
Yeah, I think this might be the answer. So a few years back, there was this documentary that came out I saw on Netflix called Chuck Norris versus Communism.
First off, awesome title.
Yeah, I mean, like, how can't you watch that? It's from 2015. It's a Romanian-British documentary, and I'm reading this quickly just, like, off Wikipedia. The film's about the illegal importation of American action and religious films on VHS cassettes to Romania in the late 70s and 80s, which the filmmakers believe contributed to the fall of the communist dictatorship. Anyway, the film, basically, what it does is it follows, like, the citizens of the then Soviet Union who had these underground tapes that were American VHSs overdubbed in, you know, in basically in Polish. So I'm having trouble. Hold on, give me a second here to collect. I'm getting overexcited. So basically what happened is, like, these American tapes would be smuggled into the Soviet Union, and one lady would sit there in a room and watch the tape and then basically translate it live. Most of the time it was live because she only had like a certain amount of time to do this. And then that tape would be bootlegged and copied and circulated around the Soviet Union. And that's how a lot of these people from like Poland and Romania and like Lithuania and all those countries saw American films. They were basically overdubbed, translated by this one lady, and her name I have here, it was Irina Nistor. Margareta Ooh. Nistor.
Oh, I didn't even get the middle name. I just said it.
And she was the primary person doing this. And she was doing it
for the government, right? And then she...
Okay, so, yeah. So that was like a big... I think that was like a twist in the documentary, is the idea that she was employed by the government because they wanted to see these tapes, and then they would sort of sneak them out and make copies, and they would go on the black market and get circulated around. And after a while, it just got so big that they had to employ at least one more person. And on the documentary, they mention a guy and a guy's voice, and they have him on it too. So there was that, you know, there were several people doing this kind of thing at the time. And, you know, I think Shuler came out after the fall of the Soviet Union.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So
and
it's not like this practice was absolutely necessary.
Well, when
but
was
I
the fall
feel
of
like
the Soviet Union? 91?
Well, I mean, it depends, because, you know, Romania was not a part of the Soviet Union. Neither was Poland, but they were certainly in the Eastern Bloc. So it was between, you know, between 88 and, like, 93, everything fell. But, no, I think you hit the nail on the head here in terms of, like, this was just the culture of the Eastern Bloc. Like, as simple as just, like,
yeah.
the one person dubbing.
Exactly. Like, I feel like it's just as, you know, even when they didn't need to resort to sneaking around later on, it just was part of the culture, and every American film was just, you were used to hearing it translated by one person just basically, like, reading it to you.
That was one of the more fascinating things I found, was that, like you said, it got so big that they had to employ, like, another person, this guy, and in this documentary, all these, like, different people from the community that we've met for the past, like, 45 minutes or whatever, all of a sudden start saying, like, wait, this is, like, not a real copy. It's not a real copy of the not real copy. And they missed, like, Irina. Like, they're like, this isn't real. Where is she? Where'd she go?
Yeah, you know, after you mentioned the documentary, I checked it out. And, yeah, it was a great documentary.
Yeah,
all you
really
guys definitely check it out. It's on Netflix.
I loved it. Like, it just starts off, like, with, I think the first film that they start talking about that they saw was, like, Dirty Dancing. And then, like, you know, and, like, people are like, oh, it's, like, so provocative the way when she's, like, shaking her dress and stuff like that. And then the one guy was like, I saw Top Gun 38 times.
It's like, right. Not only that, but, like, through, like, a triple copy, right? Like, a piece of shit, like,
yeah, that's a whole thing. Yeah.
They don't care. It's all you could get your hands on. And wow, like, it really opened my eyes to, like,
it just made me so thankful. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think it's all safe to say that we're all are on the verge of being, like, you know, like, cinephiles, and so it's just definitely interesting and inspiring to see what they had to go through to be entertained and just to know that there's something else out there versus this, like, kind of this cold regime that they had going on in their country.
Yeah. So, Mike, like, this enlightening us to this film, like, was twofold for me. Because one, I definitely could draw the line to Poland. This was definitely happening in Poland as well. And even if this came out after the fall, it's still, that was their culture. Whereas, again, when we watch a dubbing of something, they use different voices for every character, almost, you know. They were just used to that there. This might have been the guy who did it in Poland. Yeah. But the second thing was, when after watching this documentary, I realized what those people were doing was kind of essentially what we were doing a little bit, me and Kyle, in terms of watching Shuler, which is, it wasn't a bootleg copy, but it might as well have been, because there was, like, scenes cut out, and, like, it wasn't the greatest quality, and we had to deal with, like, a dubbing of another language, and it was just, it's like we went into a time machine to, like, just after the fall of communism Poland and watched this film.
Yeah, you got a piece of the experience.
Yeah, exactly. It was crazy. Like, in this, people, you have to watch. It's on Netflix. Watch this documentary, Chuck Norris versus Communism. It's
a little
awesome.
Little side homework. A little,
yeah.
The only way I could, like, really think about it now is if your friend basically talked over, like, Akira. You know, and you had never seen Akira before, but, like, your friend is just doing every voice in America.
Yeah, well, this is almost like the, you know, like the, what are those, like, when you get, like, an audiobook.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Right,
but
right.
Watching
but imagine
this documentary,
an audiobook with another language going, like, with it, you know, it's not.
Yeah, underneath it, yeah.
Yeah, underneath it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I found really interesting was that she worked for the government in the beginning, and they kind of, you know, like, were in charge of what films can be shown, what can't be shown, and even what parts have to be cut out. And one of the things was that there was, like, too much food on screen in, like, different movies, from a convenience store to, like, a buffet at, like, a country club, and they're like, no, we can't show America as the land of prosperity.
Yeah, the censorship is just, like mind-boggling at times, like, realizing, like, oh man, like, I couldn't believe, like, just how strict that all was, you know. I mean, that's a communist government for you, I suppose, but it's just, like, they really are, there's, like, no arts and entertainment out, you know, that they were exposed to.
Yeah, at least
it's no wonder that
arts.
Like, yeah, and it's no wonder that, like, these tapes started getting leaked by high-ranking officials, you know. It's,
yeah,
like, that's sort of, like, how deep, like, the suppression of the arts and stuff was, I guess, that even, like, the people in charge are like, well, you know, like, it can't be that harmful, and, like, you know, like, it's just a law, like, it's, we're just kind of, like, it's whatever. But I just found that funny, is that how it leaked from, like, the top. And then sort of when someone was caught with a tape, you weren't really thrown in prison or anything. It was kind of like a blind eye. It was just like a slap on the wrist. So it was almost like, yeah, we know these things shouldn't be censored, but, you know, we have this kind of government, so we got to do what the government says.
And it's almost like they said, like, we get why you're doing it. We want to do it too, you know? Because if they did a huge crackdown, they would lose the ability to watch those movies as well, so...
Yeah, plus I'm sure they're ranking in so much cash just doing that.
Well, one guy ended up living in a mansion. He started out with like 2 VCRs, and at the end he's like, I had 360 VCRs. And these VCRs cost as much as cars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah. It's a business. It's like factory equipment, you know, mass producing these.
I wondered, though, if you went, like, I would love to watch, like, a copy of Die Hard from then, you know, with the voiceover and the horrible image and everything. I wonder if you could get any of these on eBay or anything and try and, like, have, like, stage a movie night in Brooklyn at some bar where you show, like, films of films from Poland during this time period. That,
actually, now that you mention that, like... I was on the Lower East Side the other day, and they have like a couple film societies there, like from like the old theaters when that was like a huge film community out there. I mean, I guess it still is. And they did have like a Polish night where they had filmed. I didn't look into it, but I wonder if they were doing that. That would be really cool to see. You're right about that.
Do you guys they had a range of movies. It was just what was really popular. It seemed like they were seeing some stuff from the 70s, but it was mostly 80s because it was that time. Mm-hmm. And obviously those movies were coming out on like VHS and that format. But, you know, a lot of action films. Do you think they never discussed it in the documentary. You think they saw Red Dawn? Because, boy, talk about like coming, like that would be something that like as a government, you know, trying to control your country, I would not want my citizens to like see. That would be, you know,
I'm sure
crazy.
They did, because that would just make it all the more salacious. I would say equally as salacious would be what's the one they saw? Jesus of Nazareth, you know, where they're trying to, they mentioned that a lot in the film, and that one is equally of what they would want to like oppress there, and they showed that one, so I would not be surprised if they showed Red Dawn.
Yeah
I have a feeling it was like the Wild West, that it was just, you know, people would come over with tapes and whatever they brought would just, you know, spread like wildfire. I don't really feel like it got, I mean, they didn't censor these tapes, you know what I'm saying? Like, they censored the stuff they broadcast on national television and everything, but these tapes all slipped through the cracks because they weren't even supposed to be there in the first place. So, you know, and there's even that moment where she's like, you know, I would have to dub them live. I've never seen these movies before, and someone would give me the tape and the microphone and set up the other tape, and then they'd take both tapes away from me. It can't be new stuff.
So I don't
think that they really, you know, edited any of this stuff or really, it was just like whatever we could get our hands on, let's just consume it.
Yeah, so going from that, as far as like changing things, she seemed to actually, Irina had a little bit, was a little reserved, and she wouldn't really curse. I think she at most she would say like maybe son of a bitch or something like that, but yeah, they were showing stuff from Scarface, and she was just saying, or you know, like what was her big thing, like hell, or you know, go to hell, I think, right?
Oh yeah, instead of like, that would be her go-to curse, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like they showed Scarface, which, you know, had like at one point the most like, you know, F-bombs in a movie, you know, whatever all the other ones were. It was just really funny, you know, but they love, that's what they loved about her, and they didn't even know what she looked like. These people just had, I love that in the beginning there's just this mystery and like mythos almost to her, as far as, and one of the last things I want to say about this documentary, because people just need to watch it, is that they pretty much like act a lot, it's a weird combination of a lot of recreations in this documentary, and then the interviews, but then we don't see the real people till like the end. We just hear a lot of voiceover.
It helps keep with the mystery, certainly.
Yeah, no, I really like that, and it was just cool, like, to see all these people saying, like, I think she's a brunette. Oh, I think she's a blonde. Oh, I think she was, like, cooking while she was making these,
Yeah, so, I mean, definitely you want to check this out. It's on Netflix. Chuck Norris. What is it? Chuck Norris versus Communism?
Chuck Norris versus Communism.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Chuck Norris versus Communism.
A.K.A. American movies help inspire and win Romanian revolutions.
Yes, I guess. Also, for reference on what we're talking about,
maybe you want to listen to our Shuler podcast if you hadn't already. I can't imagine that's one of our more popular podcasts because no one had heard about that movie, but definitely listen and check that one out.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And now, you know, I believe the mystery of Shuler is solved.
Shuler. Mike, can we get you do your best Shuler?
Shuler.
Oh, that was really good.
That was really good.
So, Mike, you do anything interesting back at Cage Club? Anything interesting lately? Lately. Anything our fans should check out?
Well, about Cage Club podcast, you know, the actual Cage Club podcast itself, not the network, we're waiting for a couple release dates before we get these Cage movies. I'm really bummed because there's this movie called Vengeance, A Love Story that's been out in the UK since like the end of March. But since it's not out in the American home market and hasn't been released on demand or anything, we won't cover it yet, you know, but it's out there and it's really bothering me that it hasn't been released in America because I need to get to watching that. It's called Vengeance, A Love Story.
Vengeance, A Love Story.
Well, I believe he's like some kind of rogue cop that goes after these rapists, and it's one of those, but it seems pretty cool. I'm just jonesing for new Cage, and I'm waiting for that. There's like four other Cage movies that are supposed to come out this year, but we're already in June, so I'm a little worried. we did get like five movies at the end of last year, so who knows what could happen. So that's what's happening with that cast. With Keanu, we're wrapping up Keanu soon as far as what's been released. We're going to be recording the John Wick 2 episode really soon, and then that's it until the Bad Batch comes out in theaters, and then I don't know if we'll do a theatrical review of that, but when that comes out on home video, we'll get back up with the Keanu, and we got a couple other things brewing over there. I'm not sure if I can mention it, but you know, just because Keanu's ending in Cage is sporadic doesn't mean that's the end of me. Like it or not, you'll be able to hear me on a couple more episodes starting up in the fall.
Yeah, you're going to be coming on soon. You're going to be peeping on our episodes.
Oh, yeah, soon. I can't wait. Yeah. I can't wait to do that, and hopefully I won't get my head bashed in with a with something.
Some kind of stone globe or something.
Yeah, what is it, like a head
it was a bust, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. We'll get there, but I like that movie. Well, they don't know what we're talking about yet.
I like that movie.
I like the movie. It's a good movie.
It's a good picture.
Yes, nice little tease there.
I'll be looking forward to definitely coming back here a couple times.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much, Mike, for all your support and all the love you've shown us and for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Awesome hearing from you. Thank you very much for enlightening us and educating us.
Yeah, I'm glad I could help.
Seriously, that guy knows his
movies. He's our librarian of sorts.
Yeah. If there was like an archive
yeah.
of film. Well, I know there's like an archive of film, but like for us.
For
you know,
us, yeah.
Like he's,
if we could employ someone.
Like when we can't find something or like we've never heard of something, we ask Mike Mancy.
Yep.
And he educates us. So I'm so happy you pointed out that documentary.
He's the human, like he's the walking human version of the Criterion Collection.
fair. But yeah, like again, I'm really happy you pointed out that documentary. I've probably said it a million times, but check it out. It's really cool. So Kyle, I was thinking of some other things we could talk about on this podcast where we celebrate the first third of Philip Seymour Hoffman's career. And something I noticed that we mentioned just before is that he's a part of some great ensembles. He's never the lead,
mm-hmm.
but he's a good part of these casts,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
Any thoughts on that? Favorite ensembles? Places you saw him where you're like, wow, he really worked here, or like this cast was awesome for him and built around him well?
Yeah, again, I mean, because he's somebody that plays characters, but then, you know, memorable characters, and they do stand out, but they might even like steal the scene per se, but it's not like he's a camera hog in a way.
No, he's a team player.
Yeah, totally
sure.
Team player. So it's really fun to see him on a few of these teams. And so as far as favorite ensembles, I'll go with Nobody's Fool and then Leap of Faith.
I'm assuming, of course, you're disqualifying Twister and Boogie Nights here.
Yes,
those
well,
are like the
I
ultimate
mean,
ensembles.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, yeah, definitely not. I cannot include Twister and Boogie Nights because that'll be my answer for everything.
Exactly. No. And I agree with you there. I think Boogie Nights is just, I mean, it doesn't get many better ensembles than that one.
No, that by far, it's, yeah, exactly.
But you're right. Nobody's Fool That's a great cast, anchored by Paul Newman, of course.
Yeah, and it's not like, I mean, he only has interaction with Paul Newman, so you can always, like, you know, like, so a movie like Twister, a movie like Boogie Nights, he's in scenes with, like, multiple characters. So you can always argue, like, what does ensemble mean, per se?
True,
you know,
yeah, if we want to get into the semantics of it. I guess Leap of Faith would fit more into that definition.
Yeah, so then maybe I'll have to go with that as the first one over Nobody's Fool, because you got Steve Martin, you got Meatloaf.
I forgot about Meatloaf. I continued to forget about Meatloaf being in that
Paradise
film.
By Dashboard Light, used in the movie.
So one of Philip Seymour Hoffman's short subjects was this thing called the 15-minute Hamlet.
Yeah.
Now, I know, Kyle,
I got excited. I thought it was omelet.
That'd be a long time.
A ham omelet.
That's up right up your alley there. No, but the 15-minute Hamlet, and I got to be honest with you, I got a little scared because I'm not the best Shakespeare guy.
And it sounds like gibberish to me.
But it was actually not too difficult to find. It was on YouTube. It
wasn't too difficult to find, and I actually ended up, I think we can both say, we really learned a lot.
Yeah, we did. And, of course, for anything Shakespeare, where we're going to get confused, where he said the language is crazy, we're going to bring in our Shakespeare go-to guy.
Yeah.
Which you heard him on the Twister podcast. Shakespearean actor. Actor of other things as well, but he loves his Shakespeare. John Harden.
We have a retainer on him.
Pretty much. He's like on a Shakespeare retainer. And he was so... I knew he loved Shakespeare. I wasn't sure what his favorite play was, but apparently, you know, we learned he loved Hamlet. And he was so, like, passionate about Hamlet and this 15-minute Hamlet, which he'd never seen, by the way, that we probably recorded, like, 40 minutes with him.
Definitely.
And
we're
so...
We're just going to give you a little snippet.
Yeah,
right,
we're not going to play the whole thing. Don't worry. However, I'm going to talk with Kyle, you know, while we play this clip. And we might... We might let you hear other
things. Oh, there's
some
good stuff. We need to let people hear this conversation.
We'll talk about it. So we'll let you hear the snippet we play, and we'll take it from there.
Get into it.
So, John, we invited you back.
Yeah.
Just to talk a little bit
about... Fooled you.
About one of Philip Seymour Hoffman's projects.
Yeah.
Which is 15-minute Hamlet.
Yeah.
This was I'm bad. I don't understand Shakespearean talk at all, especially when it's condensed into 15 minutes.
Had you heard of this at all, or like 15-minute Hamlet,
you
or
know,
like someone who done this?
I really should have, because so this film is an adaptation of a play by Tom Stoppard, or Stoppard, depending on whether you ask an American or a British person.
Okay.
But who's a very famous playwright and screenwriter. You would know his work because he wrote Shakespeare in Love.
Okay.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, exactly.
It's the most Shakespeare I know.
There you go.
The film that beat Saving Private Ryan.
Exactly.
How long should Hamlet usually run?
Anywhere from 2¾ to 4 hours.
What?
Four hours?
Yeah,
four hours?
A lot of people actually... talk about Hamlet as being like a mandatory 4 hours. Oh, it's got to be 4 hours.
Wow.
That's just what it is. And there's some truth to some of what they're addressing, because it's a very difficult play to cut. There are so many iconic lines. You heard many of them in this 15-minute piece, right? That was the job, the joke of it.
Trying
to cut it down to all the most, you know, to all the most iconic stuff, and yet they still leave out so much.
So I think this was on like Bravo or something, because if you watch the YouTube,
it
comes up with like some cheesy 90s Bravo thing.
Yeah, it was super weird.
Now, what year is this?
That's a really good question. Bravo Arena.
Playing music.
Yeah, Chicago. 19 videotaped in the late 1980s is all it has.
But
here,
not true.
Yes,
is that not
true? He wasn't active.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, it just looks like it.
It was produced
and directed by a guy named Todd Luiso. I don't know.
And you know him. He's in the play. He plays like the woman. And you've seen him in other things, this guy.
Oh.
He's
from High Fidelity.
High Fidelity, one of my favorite films.
Yeah.
He's in Jerry Maguire.
Yes.
He's like the babysitter. He's like some guy. He like appears like here and there.
Thank you for smoking.
Thank you for smoking. Yeah, he's like a little
he gives
like
Jerry the jazz tape.
Yeah, Coltrane. Yeah,
that's so funny.
Yeah,
that's so funny. And then they're making out, and they're like, "What are we listening to?"
So this guy randomly directs this. I have no background. I tried to like find some things. Did you think it was a good version of it? Or backtrack, this 15-minute Shakespeare, do you think this is a good concept or funny idea?
Like, I think it's funny. I think it's actually, this film is incredible. I was really struck by it. First of all, you've got some great actors. I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman doesn't have as much to do. You know, Laertes, obviously, the way that they've cut this, all of those parts are a lot smaller. He still does some things that are pretty funny. I mean, the way that he sort of sloppily throws himself. Laertes has this bit where he, you know, dramatically jumps into his sister's grave and says, "Bury us together." Okay. Right? Very melodramatic moment. And Philip Seymour Hoffman kind of like rolls and flops in this hilarious way. But the thing that I thought was most cool about it was, I don't know if this is in the Stoppard play, but the bit at the end, which I didn't understand what the hell was happening at first, but essentially you have the 15-minute Hamlet, then you have all of these people that look very, very Shakespearean era, clapping for the film we just watched.
Yeah, they're watching the film and the projector and everything.
But somehow suggesting that it's not good enough, which I realize, like, they only used lines from Hamlet, so that's part of what makes it difficult to understand, is that all of the dialogue in that scene is just lines from Shakespeare or lines from Hamlet. I think it's Hamlet exclusively, but certainly Shakespeare. And then we watch the Shakespeare character, I'm making air quotes,
cut. Bad guy from Air Force, by the way.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. cut the film even more.
Yeah, 2-minute cut, I think.
Right, until there's a 2-minute Hamlet that we then watch, and you just get... The point of this film seems to be some kind of, I would think, negative commentary, because then at the end you have everybody loving this 2-minute Hamlet and Shakespeare in the middle looking absolutely miserable. but this idea of everything needing to be dumbed down, shortened, to be more and more palatable, and the idea of losing artistic expression because of that. So I wasn't expecting it to have that kind of sharp turn that it
ended up
having.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, I did too.
I wonder if... So what's the actor-director's name again?
Todd Luiso.
I wonder if he was trained stage actor.
Yeah, I think to do this and like to put the money behind it, because he's the producer as well, you have to love Shakespeare.
So just from your telling of when I asked like how long is Hamlet, you know, like, and you said everywhere from 2.5 to 4 hours. Maybe he's someone that was trained to always think that Hamlet was supposed to play out like for its entirety, and he saw it so. You know,
saw this play and so this on some level and was like, this is hilarious, let me do it. That's what I wanted to ask, because I found it funny, right? Kyle, funny?
I mean, yeah, like that, honestly, I find it much funnier now getting the explosion.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Sorry,
by the way, this is 95, I looked it up.
95, okay. That's what I was going to say. Like, did you find this funny? Like,
it's hilarious.
On a different level, though, I'm imagining, than us, because...
Well, it's hard for me to answer that, I guess, but
I think...
Read my mind.
I guess, I guess my point is, I think it's more for you.
Reading Kyle's mind.
I think it's more for you than it is for us.
Better work on...
Yeah, I mean, I see what you mean. I think, definitely... Especially the 2-minute version, it's very easy to follow the entire thing if you're very familiar with the script already, because the characters are instantly recognizable, and you have the same actor playing Polonius as plays Claudius. That's not confusing at all if you know who Polonius and Claudius are, like the back of your hand, you know? So I didn't have any trouble following it. I thought it was funny. Side note, the guy who...
Played Hamlet,
Austin Pendleton.
He's in My Cousin Vinny. He's like the...
Bad lawyer.
Oh, yeah. I'd seen him before. I just wasn't...
That, like, stutters to the judge.
Yeah. But he currently teaches acting at the HB Studio and directs at the New School. But he also was artistic director for Circle Rep. Like, he's really a big name in New York theater.
Oh, wow, okay.
He's pretty damn...
Instead of John.
Yeah.
Pretty damn well-known. You know, so that was really funny as well, just to see him pop up. And, yeah, his work is that's the term I wanted, as the public defender in My Cousin Vinny.
Yes.
where he's instantly recognizable here, because he's, like, using a lot of the same kind of mannerisms, just without the pronounced stutter. But he kind of comes across the same way.
Interesting that they went with, like, an older actor to play Hamlet.
Yeah. I don't, yeah, I'd be very interested to hear, like, were all these people friends, or...
Yeah,
yeah I almost imagine they were, like, a troupe at one point or something.
Yeah, it had that
I wanted more background about this.
Yeah, there was, unfortunately.
That was very interesting. But, yeah, I mean, I thought it was great, you know? I don't think that... Because it, first of all, it clearly wasn't... I mean, the thesis of the film seemed to be against the idea of abbreviating Hamlet. But also because... You know, I don't have any problem with adaptations of Shakespeare's work. I think most... The opinion that I have heard spoken by some friends of mine that I usually agree with is... There's nothing wrong with doing something even really aggressive with a Shakespeare text. They're 400 years old. Everybody's seen it. You want to do something different. That's great. I think that... The trouble comes when you call your crazy adaptation Hamlet.
Well, John, thanks for coming on.
Sure.
Thanks for giving us Hamlet. Thanks for. I feel like, I don't know if you agree, Kyle, I feel like we learned.
This is the most I've learned about anything in a long time.
Well, you know, I'm bound to do another Hamlet. I don't know if I'll get to play Hamlet, but... to do another Hamlet, guys. I'll be sure to let you know. I'm currently in a production of Macbeth that's going up in Rowayton, Connecticut, with Shakespeare on the Sound. We're opening next week. I am playing the porter, which is a dirty, scuzzy, drunken knave of a part, and I cannot wait. I've been having a ton of fun.
And what day do you open?
This is going to air
June 15th.
Yeah, so this is airing on the 14th, so ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, great. So it opens tomorrow.
Yeah. Yes.
In the future. And it closes on July 2nd.
Not too far from the New York Metro.
No. Right off the Metro North, actually. Rowayton has its own stop.
Oh, cool.
So, I will plan on using to get to rehearsal on Saturday. So,
cool.
Very excited.
Well, John, again, thanks for coming on. And we look forward to having you in an episode in the future.
It's a ton of fun. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for teaching me, John. Can I get one more hardened bird?
Anytime, Kyle.
Yes.
Anytime.
Nice.
I feel like I just got, like, a full semester.
Yeah, right?
Of Shakespearean, like AP whatever.
Not only is that a smart man, and we've called him out before because he corrects us on all our grammatical errors and stuff like that.
If you got it, flaunt it.
Yes. But, like you said... I feel, like, educated after that.
That, and I always love getting Flip the Bird from Mr. John Hunter.
Yes, he does Flip the Bird. He has that smooth voice and that beautiful middle finger.
Yeah, that brooding voice.
So what do you think? What do you think about, should we give the audience what they want?
Yes, people, we're going to release a nice special, since this is a special already.
Yeah, it's almost like a special feature.
Yeah, a special feature of the special episode.
So if you liked that little bit on Hamlet...
Yeah.
You heard from John Hart in the 15-minute Hamlet and Hamlet itself. We will be releasing a longer unedited clip of John Hart talking about Hamlet. You'll enjoy that too, trust me.
Yeah, maybe you'll go check out some Bill Shakespeare after you hear this.
So something that, again, we'll notice later about Philip Seymour Hoffman's career is that he'll work with some amazing people.
Definitely.
Not just directors, but...
I mean, from... Early on, definitely did.
So in this first third, who's the most, like, impressive person he worked with? Like, your favorite lead in the film?
I gotta go with my man. The crawfish captain himself.
I assume Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
No.
Hoo-ah! He won Best Actor. Pacino.
Al Pacino. And again, it's a very... mocked performance, like, later on, but it's still a classic performance.
Yeah, he gets to be on stage, like, what, that was 92, that movie? So in 1992, a young Philip Seymour Hoffman is in a scene with one of the greatest actors of all time, on a stage, like, sharing, it's not like they have a back-and-forth dialogue, but he gets to be there and witness this powerhouse. And
you know he's learning from him, too.
Definitely. He's taking in all those little, you know, just the little minutia of from facial gestures, hand gestures. I mean, You know what? The later he gets in his career, like a movie like The Master, where he does raise his voice and stuff like that, you could you can see an appreciation for like some Pacinos in there.
Very fair. I had two here that I wrote down. Mm-hmm. One of them was Nobody's Fool, again, with Paul Newman.
Yeah,
He's a powerhouse, and I'd seen it. Look, I've seen the classic Paul Newman films, sure, but not enough to like say I've seen his whole career. And even at this age, he commands the screen. The other one I would say,
Diane Lane, My New Gun.
Yes, Diane Lane, My New Gun. No, I mean, and you know, I like Diane Lane, but whatever. Diane Lane. Not that we'll get into that film later.
No, we'll never get into that film ever.
No. But my other one is definitely, I had to say it, but Boogie Nights.
Oh, okay, sure.
I mean, you can't use your Boogie Nights Twister rule here because you can't tell me there's a Twister person who you'd put on the list.
So, are we going with Burt or are we going with Markey?
I'm going with Burt Reynolds. Okay. Here. I just want these old veterans that like he's learning from.
And hey, man, I get that, but as we discussed on the Boogie Nights episode, he was a dick.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But he still gave a great performance.
Yeah, great performance. Awesome. This is one of these old-time actors who comes back for a later movie and just brings it, you know, and really stands out. Totally. I think something in common with Paul Newman and Burt Reynolds, and maybe that was just more of a thing at the time, it's just that vocal presence.
Yeah.
Pacino has a different kind of vocal presence, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But those guys are more like the gravitas. Like, they talk and I listen.
Who'd win in a fight, Paul Newman or Burt Reynolds?
Ooh. Huh, that's tough. I think Burt Reynolds. Burt Reynolds has he plays a little more dirty, you know?
That's my Burt Reynolds.
So. That's your Burt Reynolds. Wow. Paul Newman gives too much of charity. He's kind of, you know, ugh, I'm just kidding. No, but Burt Reynolds feels like he'd go below the belt a little bit more.
Yeah, he's definitely been, I guess I'll side with him too, just because he's got facial hair.
Sometimes Paul Newman has a mustache.
It's true. One of his last roles in a great film, Road to Perdition.
Oh, yeah, true. So, Kyle, someone I'm glad that you introduced me to, who I didn't know before we had met, was your old college professor, Zach.
Yeah, Zach Bressler. He's a great guy, and as you learned on the Boogie Night episodes, I don't know exactly what title to give to him, but he's someone I'm happy that's in my life, and I always love working with him.
Yeah, and then he had a great take on Boogie Nights. You can tell he really loves that film.
And the man knows his music.
That is true. That's why we decided to bring him on for this other thing we saw in Philip Seymour Hoffman's IMDb, which was a music video, right?
Yeah, he's in a couple of music videos in his career, and this one is by Michael Penn, and it's kind of, well, you know what, you're going to hear about it, but it is a good tie-in to Boogie Nights.
Yeah, so Zach on Michael Penn's Try.
We're going to try to talk about it. Thanks for coming, Zach.
No problem.
I thought it was a good idea to bring Zach in, because this is right around the same time as Boogie Nights, this film that we're going to discuss.
It's actually a music video. Yeah. So Philip Seymour Hoffman, I didn't know this, did you, that he was in this music video for?
I've never heard of
the musician Michael Penn
before. So 1997, this is
Michael Penn. With Try.
Yeah,
Michael Penn is Sean Penn's brother.
Yeah, not Chris Penn, not the, you
that's
know, Reservoir Dogs.
Other brother. Yeah. I
He looks like Michael Imperioli, right?
Yeah.
Michael Penn, I only know one song of his.
Okay.
And it's a song called No Myth. And it has this lyric about like black jeans. And I think I've heard it only like 3 or 4 times, but I remember listening.
Black jeans, like wardrobe?
Yeah, it's actually in one of our films, now that I remember it. It's in one of the films we shot in high school.
Wow. Okay.
Someone to dance with. Like that's
okay.
And I bought black jeans when I heard the song. But that's all I know about this guy.
Yeah, so you had never...
No, I never did, so I watched it, and then I looked, you know, I researched it a little bit, and I found out that the crew of Boogie Nights made this while they were in post-production.
Wow, that's insane.
And that's, you know, that's why Thomas Jane's in it, too.
Really?
Yeah, he plays
a basketball player.
Yeah, it's a weeping like awkward, weeping. I love that.
Yeah.
Weeping basketball player. It's a very interesting. So it's it makes sense because P.T. Anderson directed, right?
And P.T. Anderson directed the video.
And it's a one like I questioned at first, you know, with movies
now. Michael Penn did the soundtrack, like the score.
Oh, okay.
To Boogie Nights.
So
I guess they're like, hey, you want to help me
keep it in the family?
Yeah,
you're right. Exactly. This awkward
Boogie Nights theme. Keep it in the family.
Yeah. So I questioned at first, you know, you got movies like Birdman out there that the whole movie is supposed to be like one shot, but clearly they like cheated that. But this whole music video is just, I imagine it's probably just like a square like hallway space and like almost looks like a, you know, high school or something, or apartment complex, I guess. Probably it looks more apartments, and it's this is one long shot that follows Michael Penn around, and we get Philip Seymour Hoffman, not much to talk about him, except he's funny in this brief moment.
But he's Scotty J in like modern times.
Yeah, modern times. Yeah. In the 90s. Yeah. He's got not as long a hair, and he seems a little huskier, but he's got like a 5 o'clock shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And he's working the...
He's working the boom.
The boom. And like handing him like the other microphone, and he's just like in like... two shots, but yeah, like you said, like Tom Jane's in it, P.T. Anderson directed it, and then Michael Penn did the music for Boogie Nights.
It's a better film, for lack of a better word, than a song, I'd say. Yeah. Unless you like the song.
P.T. Anderson has done other...
song's kind of cookie cutter-ish.
Yeah.
Nothing
really good.
It's kind of bland.
Yeah, but the video is very good.
That's awesome. And you can see it on YouTube.
Yeah, so do we know if this was P.T. Anderson's first music video? I know he's done other, he's done ones with
I'm not sure. I didn't even know P.T. Anderson
directed it.
He's
probably done, Radiohead ones now, right?
Yeah, I think one with, Bjork also. Did and he? Then he did one recently, too.
What an upgrade with musicians who do your soundtrack, by the way.
Michael Penn or Radiohead, let's
say. Wow.
But yeah, this is just a fun little music video that Philip Seymour Hoffman got to be a part of.
Yeah, so I would definitely check it out because
it's easy. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, it doesn't take a lot of your time.
To check out.
It's not
a bad song. It's just nothing.
It's very 90s.
Yeah, it's nothing that's going to stick in your head. It's like something like Third Eye Blind or something. Shit like that.
But yeah, Try by Michael Penn, co starring
Philip Seymour Hoffman, our guy.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, our man.
So thanks, Zach, so much for chiming in on this one.
Yeah, thank you.
So, yeah, like you said, Kyle, we'll see Philip Seymour Hoffman in a couple other music videos, but...
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't the biggest hit with us, and I don't know how big of a hit it was back in the
90s. But, I mean, it's directed by P.T. Anderson, which we found out.
Directed by P.T. Anderson, and just, yet again, another little fun performance by Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm glad that we know about it now, because I would have never known about this.
Sure.
Kyle, as we went through his IMDb and tried to like tackle all these short projects, there was one film we couldn't find, which is funny because we found all the feature films. Wasn't easy, but we did.
Yeah, but we did, and then even these, come on, like Law and Order, these music videos, they're up on the internet, but this one short film we couldn't find. And the thing is, this short film was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, this was more surprising than us finding Joey Breaker or Shuler. It was called Culture.
Culture.
And the directors are directors of films now.
Yeah. They have like some notoriety to them.
So we're going to do a little bit of a cheat, guys. Sorry. We wouldn't have done this if we found it, but it technically came out during this first third.
Yeah.
But was wide released in the next third.
Yeah, so we're going to count it as, we're going to give us that buffer time
to
try to find
give us what will probably amount to a couple months to find this one, and we'll probably recap Culture in our next in-between special episode. So, sorry, I mean, like I said, if we found it, we would have done it, but
whoops,
that one's on us.
But now we're going to talk just a nice little, just back to basics, just like the beginning episodes. Brian and I... covering this last little topic of a TV movie, a documentary series?
Yeah, Kyle, actually this is funny. It's called Liberty, the American Revolution. It was a historical documentary that aired on PBS that I actually watched as a child.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I always wanted to track this down, and for years I couldn't find it until we started doing this podcast. I'm like, what is Liberty? And I looked it up, and I'm like, holy shit, this is what I saw as a kid. Like, my mother used to, I guess we're getting intimate childhood details in my life, but my mother used to tell me it was on. I used to take, like, a really quick shower and run to my mother's bedroom and just, like, sit down and watch this before I went to bed. It aired from, like, either 8 to 9 or 9 to 10, you know?
It came out in 1997.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was pretty young.
Yeah, it was, like, 6-hour-long episodes.
Yeah, so they aired it, like, either 6 nights in a row. They might have aired 2 at once. It was this, like, whole thing, and it was, like, I remember it being awesome because what they would do is they would talk about the revolution, you know, like a documentary, but it was a little different than Ken Burns style because they would take actors and they would have actors be on screen, almost like reality show confessional things.
Yeah, play like important figures from that time.
Yeah, or people
or
who
just
they had
even,
who they had letters from.
Yeah, insightful. Yeah.
Philip Seymour Hoffman plays this. He's not really a character because he's a real person, yeah. But he's just like a regular common soldier named Joseph Plum Martin. And that name actually always stuck with me for years, and I didn't realize that it was him playing.
Were you Plum surprised?
Oh, yes, yes. I guess, whatever. So when I saw this, I'm like, oh my god, he was that guy?
Yeah.
And it was awesome, and he does a really great job. We're not going to go into the plot of this, no. Because we'd literally be telling you what happened in the American Revolution. But he does a really, really awesome job. And his clips are just on YouTube.
Yeah.
But I suggest, like, checking out the series as well. It's one of the better Revolutionary War documentaries.
Yeah, you know what? We'll play one little audio clip for you right now.
Awesome.
And they put me in this regiment. Half New Englanders and half Pennsylvanians. These folks is different as night and day. And myself, I'd rather be fighting with a tribe of Indians and with these Southerners. And the foreigners can hardly speak English. They don't like me either. And they call me that damn Yankee. That's about the nicest thing they say.
Hey, PSH, we got, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Joseph Plum Martin. Works.
The three-name thing. No, like I said, I think he does a great job. And this is, I'm a history buff, and this is like one of the first, like, Revolutionary War documentaries I ever saw, and it really got me into just, like, studying and reading about the Revolutionary War. So I was super excited to see that he was in it, and really happy to, just, I guess, like, share that now.
Definitely. I would like to check it out further and find, like, you know, a better quality than YouTube out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Watch it. Yeah.
I wonder if it's on, like, a PBS On Demand. We didn't really
Maybe.
Check.
But I'll have to talk to my buddy Ken Burns.
Oh, that was a good one. Whatever. Okay, Kyle, so part of the fun of this is the fact that, yes, we're ending the early chapter of his career.
Yes.
But we're entering the meat of his career. Yes. The middle third of his career.
The middle act, what in most, you know, trilogies, like Empire Strikes Back. The Dark One.
Yeah, I don't know if this is... it could be considered a little dark, but this is the one where he's got a lot of these great roles.
Yeah.
So I'll ask you, it might be a tough question. Which film are you looking forward to watching again and then us discussing?
Oh my god, you have to go first. Tell me yours, then I'm going.
Okay.
You have to.
I figured you'd go first.
Nope.
I would play the wimp here.
Nope.
And just go off your
totally,
answers.
I'm accepting the role of the wimp. Yep.
Okay, so I guess the two films that I'm looking forward to, if we're picking two, whatever, because I can't narrow it down to one.
Yeah. You can never.
Looking forward to Almost Famous.
Yeah.
Because just, you know, that Lester Bangs role. And he's not the lead again, but he plays such a
beautiful, simple part of just, like, anybody that just wasn't cool or didn't feel cool.
Yeah, his lines, I mean, he plays a real guy, too, and he's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about that one, watch that one. It's a great movie as well. And the other one, believe it or not, is Along Came Polly. Because
my God.
So many people have referenced this film, this romantic comedy that, you know.
You bastard.
We've talked about this movie for years, so this is just going to be a fun episode.
It's by far one of my favorite comedic performances of all time. Of all time. Not just of his.
which is crazy to say, because if you just saw this movie on paper, or just the script, you'd be like, I'm not watching this crap.
Brian, you just made it rain.
Okay, right. Kyle, so you can't pick those. Pick one or two.
Well, those are clearly my picks.
I didn't know.
No.
You're the one who said, you made me the white pieces. You made me go
No,
first.
That's fine. So I'm going to match your Along Came Polly and Almost Famous with Punch Drunk Love.
Okay, another P.T. Anderson. You're a P.T. Anderson guy. Yeah.
And more than Punch Drunk Love, because we're totally including this part, the Mattress Man commercial.
Okay, fair.
So, that, and I'm going to go with Mr. Freddie Miles from Talented Mr. Ripley.
Nice.
Simply for the line that we even use in the intro of our show, which is, as the Peeping Tommy. And then his scene in that movie where he's just taunting Matt Damon and playing, like, Matt Damon's trying to talk to him and he's just playing these dissonant notes on the grand piano.
Yeah, that's great.
It's masterful.
Can't wait for that one, too.
And there's so many other good roles.
Yeah, like I think of, first of all, Big Lebowski.
Flawless, Magnolia.
Happiness. I mean, Happiness. That's going to be an interesting episode.
Oh, my God. I know we have some guests that we've already got lined up for some episodes that are really excited for some of these films. I cannot wait for this Ness.
Yeah, we're getting into
his career.
We're getting into the meat, like I said, and this is, maybe it's this middle part, like, that made us want to do this podcast.
I cannot wait, and I hope you guys are excited as we are, because we're in for some treats ahead.
So we're curious to what you guys think of the first third of his career, or even of the podcast in general. Comment in our comment section when you listen to this podcast.
Yeah, you've
shoot
been
us
awesome.
A message.
You've been awesome. It's really been building up.
Yeah, we've gotten some great messages from fans and just people who love. When I say fans, I mean Hoff fans.
Hoff fans.
Who
yes.
cares about us? But like, just really other people who love his work and love all his films, just like us.
Yeah, PSH is our conduit to you.
Yes. So next week we're gonna have a movie I'd never seen. Unfortunately,
yes, a state I've never been to.
Yes, the film is called Montana. Mm-hmm. I think it might be a little step back from Boogie Nights.
A little,
but that's okay because it has Stanley Tucci, one of my favorites.
Aha! Stanley Tucci. You have his cookbooks.
Yes, I do own his cookbooks because he's an awesome man. And joining us, our guest, like we said, our most frequent guest, Jenny O'Connell will be there because she's also Stanley Tucci.
She is. She's
diehard.
More than me, I'd say. A Tuccinite,
maybe. So, like, follow, subscribe, share, do all the things to just share what we're doing with the world.
Please,
so we can just, you know, celebrate this man who we love dearly. Oh, and by the way, we took some of your suggestions and we kind of molded them together. And we finally decided on an outro. If you don't like it, let us know. But we kind of like it here, and I'm going to throw it away to Kyle. So, Kyle?
I'm honored. Thank you. P.S. Stay uncool, Hoff fans.
P.S. Stay uncool. I love it.
Sex a thing, you. I believe in marriage.